to the Industry Solutions panel. First of all, Tim Jones, very sorry that he can't be here, but he's got a family bereavement, I believe. But we have a wonderful replacement in Helen Dean, who knows even more about this subject than Tim does. So, Helen, if you could kick us off, that would be great.
Think that there are three phases that we need to go through to get to where we need to be in terms of delivering pension reform. The first one is designing the right kind of product, secondly, delivering it, and thirdly, enhancing it. We have been designing a pension scheme specifically for the purposes of automatic enrolment, so we've been thinking hard about how we need to change and adapt things in that environment. And we, thinking about consequences of bringing in large cohorts of people new to saving, new to pensions, new to investment in general, and also thinking about what automatic enrolment means in practice. It's based on behavioural economic techniques. It's different in nature to the traditional, more usual opt-in method. So we've designed and built a product with features that work for our target market of members and employers. For example, simple, clear communications using very plain language that people can understand, that we've researched and understand that people can relate to. An online service which is easy to use and works for employers of all sizes. A scheme that stays with the member wherever they go and whatever they do. A tailored investment approach which is quite sophisticated under the bonnet but very easy to drive. And the right number of focused choices, which are very clearly labelled for people. Not too much choice, because people tell us too much choice is overwhelming, but they do tell us they want a certain amount of investment choice in there, even, interestingly, if they're not going to use it. Helping getting your retirement income, so making sure that when people get to the end of their pension saving period, they've got help to actually make decisions about what kind of product to buy and what to do. And we will give that help through our online retirement planning tool, but also we would then give people who wish to buy an annuity either access to the open market option or access to our Nest panel of annuity providers, who are five leading providers who will quote for pots down to £1,500. So we know that everybody will be able to get access to their savings no matter how small their pension is. And of course, finally and critically, the opt-out process. Making sure that we get the opt-out process right. Our employers tell us that they don't want to administer the opt-out process. We will administer the opt-out process on behalf of the employer. Members tell us they want to be able to complete the process in a single journey. We will provide that, but we also provide people with very clear information about what they're going to be giving up if they opt out of saving. So a careful balance between ease of access to the opt-out process, but very clear information to make people understand clearly the consequences of giving up their pension. And then delivery. We started last year, and we've been delivering in our early launch phase for a little while now. We are working with over 150 employers now and learning a lot from that, but the real delivery challenge is still to come for all of us in UK pensions. We have the challenge now of helping more than 1 million employers in the UK through their staging. By the end of 2013, I think 6,000 of our largest employers will have come through their staging period. So there's a challenge for us in helping and supporting employers through that period. And we find employers need to, first of all, understand the reforms and what that means for them and their workforce. Secondly, decide what they're going to do about that. Thirdly, decide how they're going to plan to address all of the issues in their workforce, communicate with their workers, and finally, of course, set up a scheme, enrol their workers, and actually make contributions. And we're providing a range of tools and techniques that employers will be able to use to help them through that onboarding process. And then finally, there's the future, there's the enhanced phase, where I think one of the biggest issues we will all face is thinking about how we get people who have been brought into pension saving through inertia to the point where they think about whether or not they're saving enough. And there are some very interesting tools and techniques in behavioural economics, things like the SMART programme, which give us some interesting ideas about how we might help people by pre-committing to saving, to save a little bit more. And then finally, of course, there's the small pots debate and understanding what we're going to do about accumulating small pots together in aggregate. And I'm fascinated to see the results of the government's consultation on that.
Great. Thank you very much for that introduction, Helen. And now, Joanne Seegers from NAPF.
I'm going to stand up here because it's a bit difficult to see at the back, I think. Now, we've heard through the course of this morning some good and interesting suggestions about how DC could be improved, and I think it's fair to say that we're all working hard to achieve that. The NAPF's leading work on charges, the ABI's produced its code on the open market option, the government's doing good work on small pots. But for us at the NAPF, the solution to how do we get good DC, how do we get the DC that we need and deserve in this country, is a model that looks very, very different from today's inefficient DC way of doing DC in the UK. As we've heard, the current model we have is far too opaque. It's difficult for people to be able to navigate their way through the system, and that's why we took up the cudgels on costs and transparency, and we're leading work on charges and on transparency of charges, and I'm delighted that many of you in the room are supporting that work and actively contributing to it. But it's very clear, too, that the current market is too, or the current DC environment is far too fragmented. There are over 50,000 separate DC schemes in the UK. If we look at the average size of DC schemes in the UK, I think that really hammers home the point. The average size of DC schemes in the UK is 2,500 members. In the Netherlands, it's 10,500 members. And in Australia, an environment that we look to frequently, it's 26,000 members. So our schemes are very, very small. And with that come a whole bunch of efficiencies which work against delivering good member outcomes. And that is what it's all about, as the pensions regulator made very clear last year. Those small schemes have, attaching to them, much higher costs. Over 50% of group personal pensions and stakeholder pension schemes have charges in excess of 1%. And very many trust-based schemes are also very costly. And that is, in many cases, a function of size. Smaller schemes have weaker governance. Governance isn't much a word that we've heard much about today, but smaller schemes, it is absolutely central and central to delivering those good member outcomes. And smaller schemes have weaker governance, and in very many cases in the DC environment, there's no governance at all to ensure that the scheme works on the side of the members. Smaller schemes are less able to help their members through the annuitisation process. They're much less able to help people through that difficult process of the open market option. And they're less able to access those efficient investment opportunities that we just heard about. And all of that leads to poor consumer outcomes. Now, Liz Cawley put up on her slides this morning some of the steps, based on some research we commissioned from the Pensions Policy Institute, some of the steps that individuals can take together with their employers very often to improve their consumer outcomes. And you saw in cost terms, in outcome terms, the difference that that could make. And they are important incremental changes. But for us, we need a rethink, because we're never really going to get behind some of those issues that I've just outlined, some of those problems I've just outlined, and achieve the ambitious vision that we have for DC in the current individualised market, sort of retail-based environment for delivering pensions. So for us, what we need to do is to move DC very much more into the wholesale space. Now, we've heard a lot today about the need for a different or reformed regulatory environment for DC pensions and for pensions generally. But actually, from our perspective, what we need are new pensions institutions. And what we've proposed is a new breed of pension scheme, which we call super trusts. And super trusts, and you've heard us speak about this before, we're a bit like Steve Webb in that sense, we're going to bore you into submission on this point. And I think, and you'll hear me say later, I think some of that is reaping dividends. Super trusts are large scale, and I mean very large scale, DC, trust-based, not-for-profit schemes. And I think they've got a very significant place in the post-auto-enrollment world. They could be consolidators, so they could be schemes that receive the small pot transfers that we've been talking about, and they could be consolidators of existing subscale DC schemes that individual smaller employers are operating. But at their heart is governance. At their heart are the independent trustees that run those schemes. So in that sense, they're perhaps a little bit different from some of the master trusts that are being developed at the moment. And those schemes have a legal duty to put members first. And by supersizing these schemes, by ensuring that there are many, many members going into the schemes and much assets going into the schemes, it's possible to really access investment opportunities and investment efficiencies by delivering that governance bonus. And there's some good research from Canadian academic Keith Ambershire, which shows just what the size of that governance bonus can be. And we estimate that those schemes can operate on a very, very low charging basis, around about 40 basis points. And I'd also suggest that actually the way that you deliver that DC plus, that defined ambition, please let's not call it defined ambitionville, that defined ambition that Steve Webb outlined this morning, the way that you can deliver that for the DC world, whether that's through a sort of newfangled with-profit scheme or whether that's through a sort of German-style Riester plan of investment guarantees, the way you can best deliver that is through very large pension arrangements. And I'm encouraged that we are seeing some developments in this area. We've already heard from Helen at Nest, and Nest is, to all intents and purposes, a super trust. We're going to hear from Nigel soon, from Now Pensions, and there's also the People's Pension that's being developed. All of these schemes are schemes which are operating on the side of the members. And they're good and encouraging developments, but we need to see more. And again, there are some glimmers of hope on the horizon. We've seen already, and Helen's mentioned it, the small pots consultation DWP has just completed, and I think the consensus there is actually the consolidation model rather than the pot follows the member model is the right way forward. So again, a potential supply of people into super trusts. But we need to do much more. And so what we need is a new regulatory structure, is a new way of ensuring that these schemes can come into being and to ensure that those schemes are set up. And we see a very strong role, as Bill Gowan in the audience, a very big role for the pensions regulator in this sphere. And I'm very struck, I was very struck by the comments that Jeremy Cooper made at Gleneagles last September when he talked about the way in which, having already got very large pensions institutions in Australia, they're looking at consolidating them further to get those scale efficiencies that I talked about. And one of the things they're introducing in Australia is this efficiency test. So each year, the trustees of those super funds in Australia, and they are all trusteed, would have to pass a test, and the regulator would have to be satisfied that they were operating efficiently. And if they weren't, then they'd be forced by the regulator to consolidate with another super fund. And I think that's quite an attractive way of ensuring that we start to create some scale, we start to speed up this process of reaching scale and efficiency. So they're very big schemes which require a very big rethink and bold thinking. Because I think simply carrying on with those iterative changes we've made, they're all very important, but they're simply not going to deliver individually or collectively the step change that we want to see for DC pensions, but more importantly, that our members desperately need. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Joanne. So a radical set of proposals and need regulatory actions, Joanne has argued for, and now Dick Saunders from the IMA.
Well, good morning, everybody, and congratulations to City UK for organising this, what's been a very interesting event so far, and I hope we can this panel can keep that up. I'd like to reflect on one or two of the things that we've heard already. I think one of the things I was struck with most in the sessions this morning was Doug Taylor's checklist of 16 points. Whereas I'm sure everybody in this room would have held up the green card had they been asked. I think in most workplaces, very few people would have done. And I think he captured very well what the challenge is in communicating to people in this new world. And the key risk of not meeting that challenge is quite simply, and again we've heard a bit about this, that people will not save enough. And if people are not putting enough in the first place, no amount of clever investment strategy is going to make up that difference. The key to getting a decent retirement income is to start saving early, start saving enough, and carry on. So I think that the theme that I think is perhaps most important here is the one of governance. You know, we need to have governance structures which are fit for purpose, which deliver for the scheme members, irrespective of whether you're in a trust-based scheme or a contract-based scheme, because both are going to continue existing side by side. I think an important part of that, one that hasn't been talked about quite so much, perhaps, is workplace advice. I think that is going to be a very critical issue going forward. It's actually a huge opportunity for the IFA sector as well. Just one example, at the IMA, we're an organisation of about 40 people, and we pay for every employee to have 1 hour with an IFA every year to discuss their pensions. Now, that's not a model that is going to be workable for all employers. I don't think it's a model you can see working in Tesco's, for example. But I think the message I would like people to think about there is that should workplace financial advice come to be seen as much more a standard employment benefit alongside health insurance? You know, I think if we can get that shift, that would be an important shift in the right direction. I'd like to make a quick comment about charges. I'm not going to labour it, but we heard quite a lot about it this morning. I think that transparency in charges is obviously critical. The good news on that is that, in fact, in one sector of the financial services industry, which is the fund sector, unit trusts and OEICs, we do have an extremely transparent charging regime. Ken Davey referred to it, in fact, from the floor, the total expense ratio. And I think, you know, his point was absolutely right. The total expense ratio does convey to people, it tells people very clearly how much they're paying in total, notwithstanding what some people are saying to the contrary. But it is, as Ken said, curious that it doesn't extend to other parts of the financial services industry. Now, there is currently legislation that's going to be put forward in Brussels shortly, the Packaged Retail Investment Products Directive, which is going to seek to extend that sort of gold standard of charges disclosure to all products. It's going to run into a storm of resistance from the continental European banking and insurance industries. So I suggest everybody in this room should be trying to get behind that legislation and try and drive through gold standard transparency right across the financial services sector. I'd like to conclude with three facts about the current market, which I think are germane to the debate that's been going on here. The first point I would make is that the level of the FTSE 100 index today is about the same as it was in 1998, 14 years ago. And I think that's what sits behind a lot of the very widespread perception that people have that I've been putting money into a pension, it's not done anything, it's a waste of time. The problem, that is, I'm afraid, a feature of saving at a time when markets are going nowhere. It's not a reason not to save. Because, okay, the FTSE has been moving sideways for 14 years. That sounds appalling. Actually, we've been here before. This is it's the fourth time in the last 100 years. This is the way markets work. But bear markets do come to an end and are succeeded by bull markets. We just don't know when. All I can say about the next bull market is that we're 14 years closer to it than we were in 1998. Second point I would like, interesting fact about the market. They're just 30 years closer to it. Second point about the market today is that in January, the yield on 10-year gilts fell to 1.92%. That is the lowest yield on 10-year gilts since the Bank of England started issuing them in 1703. Think about that, 300 years. What that is telling you is that, actually, I'm not sure I'm a buyer of gilts right now. The message, though, there's a serious message here, that if we are going to move into a world of safe harbours, of regulation around default funds, which, you know, there may be a case for goodness sake, do not be prescriptive, because I can guarantee that any prescriptive regime that might have been written in the last few years would have had people moving by the bucket load into gilts in the first quarter of 2012. Do not be prescriptive. As we heard from that very good presentation from Olivia earlier on, that the setting out investment strategies in the abstract, in theory, doing it on paper, doesn't work. You've got to be smarter about investment strategies. Don't prescribe them in advance. Finally, a third point. Elizabeth Cawley made a very striking point, and I think she's right, to say that there is a question mark about the amount of capital available to support guaranteed incomes in the future. I think she's right. I don't think we've hit the crisis yet. We may not hit it for 10 years, maybe more. But sooner or later, there will be constraints on the supply of annuities. They are not something that can be supplied in infinite quantities. There is therefore a need to think creatively about income products. We talked a lot about investment about the accumulation phase. We need to think about income too. And then there, I just throw in my third fact about the current market, which is the current dividend yield on equities right now is something like 3.5% or 4%, which actually compares rather favourably with annuity rates. What's more, had you put, say, £100,000 or £10,000 or whatever into shares 10 years ago, you would have seen, in terms of the value of those shares, you'd see an absolute roller coaster ride. It climbed up, right back down again, now sort of limping back up again. If you look at it through the other end of the telescope, though, and say, what income would I have earned from that investment? The answer is quite different. The answer is you earn a very steady income. What's more, one that increases. I mean, that had you put your £10,000 in the market, say in a standard equity income fund 10 years ago, you'd have seen your income rise fairly steadily over that period by about 30%.
Yeah, can you just?
So, there are other ways to think about income too. Final point. That's it. Thank you.